All right, welcome back to Talking Taker. This is episode number 16, right? I think so.
Yeah,
episode
man, 16. Talking Taker has his driver's license now. We are on the road.
The Sweet 16, perfect for the tournament that we're about to get into. But in case you don't know, this is the encyclopedic exploration, digging up the career of the greatest professional wrestling character of all time. And we do appreciate you joining us for yet another round of Dead Man Talking. As you know, we are going through every pay-per-view match of The Undertaker's career, one match at a time, over-analyzing, diving deep into all the matches, the backstories, all of it, trying to uncover the biography, the history of the World Wrestling Federation, World Wrestling Entertainment, and arcing the career of just one character. My name is Alex Dorio. I am one of your hosts for this journey, and I'm joined, as always, by my tag team partner and the world's biggest Men on a Mission fan, Travis White. How you doing there, buddy?
Whoa. I don't know about that.
What?
But I'm great.
I see you there in those purple overalls. I'm dressed up for today.
Oh, it's a good thing we don't Skype this. We don't show people.
It's true.
Visual. Yeah, I got my purple Men on a Mission outfit on. No, I got my Bulldogs, my Georgia Bulldogs outfit on.
That's right.
Excited for, I guess when this podcast drops, we'll be playing Auburn tomorrow. So, whoop, go Dogs, hope we win. We'll see what happens.
My Clemson Tigers are playing as well, playing Miami Hurricanes. So, that'll be a big game as well. Could be meeting up, could be Clemson, Georgia at some point.
For our international listeners who don't care, give a crap about college football, we apologize. Go soccer.
I don't apologize at all. No.
But thanks, and seriously though, we do have some international listeners. We appreciate it. All our downloads, keep getting bigger and bigger every week, and we just appreciate that. And y'all are great, and you're awesome, and your feedback is great too. We get lots of good feedback, so we love it. Give us bad feedback if you need to. Improve the show.
That's right. We're not trying to blow smoke up our own butt. We just think it's cool that anybody's listening. So we appreciate it, and we're up to about 600 followers on the Twitter now. Got some Facebook followers, YouTube followers. We do appreciate you listening and reaching out every week. It's fun, man. We're having a blast. And I especially want to shout out a couple cool guys that reached out to me on Twitter. They also got a podcast. This is the Best Wrestling Podcast. That's the name of it, the Best Wrestling Podcast. They're at RealBWPodcast on Twitter, at RealBWPodcast. Just want to shout them out. They shouted us out on their podcast, said how much they enjoyed our show. So I gave them a listen, and you ought to go check them out. I know there's a lot of wrestling podcasts out there to listen to, but these guys do a great job breaking down Raw and SmackDown, all the news in the wrestling world every week. They got a great sense of humor, some interesting, unique perspectives on things. Made me think about some stuff I hadn't thought about listening to them. So go check them out. Best Wrestling Podcast on iTunes. When you get done with us, go give them a listen. So now we're going to move on to our podcast, to our discussion. We are skipped around a bit from WrestleMania 11. There's been a pay-per-view in the interim, the first ever In Your House pay-per-view. We talked a little bit about that towards the end of the last episode. Undertaker not involved there. He's in a dark match defeating Kama. But we are going to cover our first King of the Ring pay-per-view here on Talking Taker. Undertaker not involved in the first two King of the Rings for various reasons. 1993, he just didn't fit into the card, I guess. And 1994, he's out in the mystery of the Undertaker saga.
He's dropping in on butchers and firefighters and kindergarten classrooms.
No time for a King of the Ring.
While Leslie Nielsen searches for him. No time to train for the King of the Ring.
Exactly. Yeah. But here we are, King of the Ring 95. Man, what are your memories of King of the Ring? It's a lost pay-per-view, I guess. We haven't had a King of the Ring tournament since 2014 when
they had it on the network.
Barrett won. Yep. Were you a fan of King of the Ring?
I love King of the Ring. I love tournaments. That's one reason. That's one thing that New Japan Pro Wrestling does really well are tournaments. According to Bruce Pritchard in their podcast, he says that Vince just hates tournaments.
That's
so
weird.
I don't know why you would do King of the Ring. I love tournaments. I love the Super J Cup. I love G1. All that stuff is great to see the tournaments go over, even if it's a couple nights. But a one-night tournament to me is awesome because it makes it feel more real. You get to see the characters, the wrestlers sell their injuries from the beginning of the night to the end of the night. In this particular one we're going to talk about, you get to see one guy wrestle four times. One was a dark match, or on Coliseum Video.
Special. Coliseum Video anyway, exclusive.
Yeah, Coliseum exclusive. So anyway, but I love King of the Ring. I really wish it would come back. It doesn't have to be, you know, I don't like the scepter and the robe stuff. I don't like all that cheesiness. But I love the idea that this guy wins a tournament and he's supposed to be, you know, not necessarily the next big thing, but a main event, you know, a main event guy. First King of the Ring was Bret Hart, right?
Bret Hart.
Bret Hart 93, Owen Hart 94. Those both went on to be bigger and better things. Here, not so much. You know, there's some swings and some misses here, but, you know, King of the Ring 96 is Stone Cold Steve Austin 97, Triple H. You know, he goes on and on, and he's got great Hall of Fame competitors winning King of the Ring, and I wish they would bring it back. I think it'd be a great network special, even.
Yeah.
A great night. It's all the semifinal, the qualifying matches. It can take up the whole month of May and June. You know, it builds television. It builds to something, which is a lost art nowadays. But seeing that, I would love to see it come back.
So. I mean, in this era with the network, it just seems ridiculous when you're always searching for new content for the WWE Network. Why is there not King of the Ring? And we have 14, 15 pay-per-views every year. You're trying to give a gimmick to each one and make each one feel special. Everyone loves King of the Ring. You never hear someone saying they didn't like it. Everyone's always nostalgic about it. It works. Yeah. It gets people over. It tells a story. And, you know, even with our winner of this year's King of the Ring, Mabel, who we're going to, I'm sure we both have a lot to say about, you know, we laugh and joke like, oh, yeah, it didn't work. But if you think about it, man, Mabel, Viscera, I believe his real name, Nelson Frazier, that had a heck of a career. He was in the WWE for many, many years, had a long time run there, many different characters. I don't know if you can really attribute that to winning the King of the Ring, but and he obviously was not a world champion or probably not a Hall of Famer or anything like that, but the guy did have a pretty long meaningful run there in WWE. We're going to cover him a couple more times, even many, many more episodes from now. We'll get to him in an Elimination Chamber match, I'm pretty sure. I think so.
Well, he comes back in the Ministry of Darkness as well, on Undertaker's side. So
right. We'll
see Nelson Frazier a couple more times as this podcast continues. So, anyway, you guys, Twitter followers, you know, Facebook list, our subscribers, let us know what you guys think about King of the Ring. Should they bring it back or what? You know, we really want to know what your opinions are, because we both agree that it should be brought back. So
absolutely. Maybe not modeled after this particular year.
No.
I think we would agree with that.
So
I just kind of want to talk about that. This King of the Ring tournament, if you look up the brackets for this tournament, and I will post a picture of the brackets on there in case you don't remember, but just going through the, even skipping over the opening qualifying round, the opening round, the matches are Mabel versus Undertaker, Shawn Michaels versus Kama, Bob Sparkplug Holly versus The Roadie, and Savio Vega versus Yokozuna. When I'm looking at this, and then you look at what happens in each match, it doesn't look like there's any thought put into any of this. It looks like when you simulate a King of the Ring tournament on a 2K game, and it just puts random people in there and randomly selects the winner. These are not the matches you would pick to have great matches, and then you look at the winners. Those aren't the winners you would predict. This is just the most bizarre, random drawing of a tournament ever. It's so strange.
Yeah, it really is, man. And as we get into it and talk about it, it's very strange. And I watched a lot of these matches, honestly, because I wanted to see, because at this point, Savio Vega had just debuted, I think, in May or April, or right after WrestleMania, I think.
I think he debuted at the In Your House pay-per-view before this.
Yeah, so they're really trying to put him over, and you can see that. I mean, he's got the rocket strapped to his back during this particular pay-per-view. Did it work? I don't know. Stone Cold Steve Austin talks very highly of Savio Vega.
He does.
As far as getting him back into ring shape when he came into WWF, and he's a great worker, there's no doubt. But, you know, you can see that story being told. But, yeah, you're right. Some of the winners, because as we talk about this particular match, I do want to talk about the rest of the card for a little bit. But before that, I want to get to some other things, too. It is very strange pay-per-view, the way the winners are laid out and how the story is told throughout the night.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, what did you want to talk about?
Oh, I was going to say, this is from, King of the Ring is June 25th, 95. It's in Philadelphia at the Spectrum, which is a very, I'll say, world-famous arena.
Sure.
And it's no longer open. The last activity held there was in 2009, and it was Pearl Jam's Halloween show. So
there you go.
Those of you who know me know I'm the humongous Pearl Jam fan. I'm Pearl Jam Mark, if you want to say it. So yeah, that's a little bit of trivia there.
Cool.
Pearl Jam was the last act or anything to go on at the Spectrum. It's a really great place. I really wanted to get to the Spectrum before it closed. I would love to have seen that place. So anyway, before I started watching this, I was doing a little research, and I went back to an episode of Raw on April 17th, 1995. So this is a couple months before this pay-per-view. But this is just something funny, and I think our listeners would like it. It's a public service announcement from The Undertaker. It's this camera shot underneath, like it's in a grave almost. It's looking up at Taker, and he's holding a shovel. And he says, if you drink and drive, sooner or later, you're going to meet The Undertaker. And then it just goes off. So it's like a don't drink and drive thing. I just thought it was hilarious. And I just, it happened after WrestleMania, but this is the next time we talked about Undertaker. So I wanted to throw that in there so that those of you who are listening, go back to it. Look at on WWE Network. Look at April 17, 95. Hilarious, man. I have no idea. But again, it's Undertaker's coming. He's still in character, but he's doing these PSAs like we talked about a few episodes ago. He's going to monster truck rallies, so he's still not losing. He's not losing the luster of the Phenom, but Vince is starting to use him in other settings,
That's
kind of cool.
I don't remember that at all. I remember those in the 80s where they have Ultimate Warrior, telling people not to smoke, and he'd just break up a bunch of cigarettes and stuff like that. I do not remember that. I have to go find that.
You have to go watch it, man. It's great. But I also just, as I was reading and researching and looking at some recaps of this pay-per-view, did you find anybody that gave this pay-per-view a thumbs up? This is the most universally loathed pay-per-view in WWF history, in my opinion.
It's awful. It really is. It's even as a kid renting it from the video store, there were a lot of videos in the wrestling section that I would rent over and over and over again. Never got tired of watching. Like I mentioned, Survivor Series 1990, I watched all the time. SummerSlam 91, Survivor Series 94, WrestleMania 10. I definitely rented this show as soon as it came out, like I did as soon as every wrestling video came out. And I don't think I ever rented it ever again. Savio Vega, like you said, Stone Cold always puts him over. A lot of the wrestlers will always put him over. As a fan, watching him never interested me, never got into him, never enjoyed his matches, his personality, or anything like that. Not a bad worker, definitely better than IRS, I would say, who he happens to defeat in his qualifying match. But, never wanted a Savio Vega t-shirt or action figure or anything like that,
I agree. So again, I know we're going to talk Taker in just a minute, but I wanted to say too, this is in Philadelphia, which is, this is ECW's stomping ground. It is gone from Eastern Championship Wrestling to Extreme Championship Wrestling under the tutelage of Todd Gordon and Paul Heyman. And you can see in the front row of this pay-per-view, there are some ECW, fans. The guy with the Hawaiian shirt and the hat, and the guy that sits to his left, I guess, he's there as well. And so, very just interesting, I thought. And again, Philadelphia is known as a fantastic fan base. They're rabid. They let you know what they do would like and don't like. The idea that the WWF would put on this fart of a show in Philadelphia, I just don't get it, man. It's weird. And I want to talk about the main event. Because the main event of the show, they poop all over. They start chanting ECW and boring and stuff like that. And so it's very strange. That's not the Taker match. We'll get to that. But, it's just a weird, choice of card and story to tell in Philadelphia.
It's a big jumbled mess of a card that is poorly booked, just weirdly booked, weirdly put together. We're going to highlight that through this one match. You mentioned those fans. I had that written down later on. At one point in the match, they start, like, those ECW fans, like the signature ones that you see in the show, they're like yelling stuff at Mo on the outside, and I couldn't hear what they were yelling. I don't want to accuse those guys of saying something, but this is 1995 ECW Philly crowd. May have been saying some uncouth, maybe slightly racist things towards a black manager on the outside. Just guessing. I don't know.
Yeah, I saw that too, and I was wondering the same exact thing.
Yeah.
I was like, I wonder what they were saying. So, but yeah. Well, we've been flapping our gums for a while. You ready to get into the actual show?
I guess we have to. Undertaker versus Mabel, the final match of the quarterfinal round of King of the Ring 1995, and the winner of this match, the way the tournament has played out, is going to walk their way into the finals, because the previous match between Shawn Michaels and Kama has gone to a time limit draw. So
15-minute Broadway, dude.
Yeah.
15-minute Broadway. Yeah, and Kama has the big old gold urn necklace around. And I noted he no longer has the Hanes shirt underneath. He's just wearing the red singlet now, so he's upgraded.
Looks a lot better.
I guess.
I think so. Yeah,
he definitely looks better, but not great. But yeah, so again, Shawn Michaels. Okay, you got Shawn Michaels and Undertaker in this brackets. Those are your two biggest baby faces. Because at this point, Shawn Michaels, he was heel at WrestleMania. He turns face the night after, I believe, to help save Diesel. And Sid is now a heel, I think. And well, is Sid in the corporation at this point?
Yeah, night after WrestleMania, Sid turned on Shawn Michaels, and Diesel came out to save him. Yeah. So that's how Shawn Michaels turned babyface.
That's right.
But yeah, they're the top two babyfaces, and you would think the two favorites going into this tournament.
Yeah, and then you got Shawn Michaels going on 15-minute Broadway with Kama, so it's like, are you serious? Again, that's a 15-minute, you know, time limit draw, which means neither one of them gets to go on.
Right.
So it saves Kama, I guess. He doesn't lose any steam. But Shawn Michaels, I mean, he dropped some choice words in the ring. I don't know if you saw it. He said that's BS, and he looked like legitimately angry. I don't know if he was. He probably was. I'm not sure how hard to deal with he was at this point in his career. But you can tell he wasn't happy. But and then your other most popular face in the entire tournament is the Undertaker. And
he's out too
in this match.
So that's part of why this crowd, you know, you kill the crowd in the first hour of the show, because the two guys they were there to cheer for, you take them out and you're shoving Savio Vega, of all people, down their throat, who's a new guy, who's not over. He's taking the spot of Razor Ramon, who's hurt before the show. So he is probably going to be Razor Ramon versus Mabel in the end, which is slightly better, I suppose. Than Savio Vega. Oh, well, it's definitely better than Savio Vega.
Yeah.
But
those of you younger fans that may not understand, it's kind of like when Daniel Bryan came back in 2015 and he got eliminated in the Royal Rumble at like halfway through and the crowd just crapped on it. I mean, wouldn't you say it's about the same thing? I mean, you take your two biggest faces out and it just sucked the wind out of the entire arena.
It does.
You know? It's a rabid Philly crowd and they let you know what they do and don't like, so.
It could be better if you had a stronger heel that they're going up against, but you're also trying to get over this big, you're trying to strap a rocket to the heel to Mabel, who has been a babyface tag team wrestler. I mean, this is like taking, they're not even like the top tag team, Men on a Mission. Mabel is one half of a rapping goofy tag team that has turned heel a couple months beforehand, and out of nowhere is a singles wrestler in this tournament. He defeated Adam Bomb the month before to qualify for the tournament, but now you're trying to get him over to win this tournament, and the crowd just doesn't care. They don't buy into any of this, but they do their best by putting him over the Undertaker, of all people. Just absolutely insane.
And it's true, man. Did you see who Undertaker qualified for the King of the Ring over?
Oh, good old Double freaking J.
Double J, May 29, 95. He defeated Double J with Tombstone. Also, on that night, this is something I want to talk about before we get in the match. They debuted a brand new Undertaker t-shirt.
Oh.
I watched that Monday Night Raw. I watched a lot of it. And it's glow-in-the-dark, and it says, "He's got soul. .. maybe yours," and he's down on his knee with his hand up, and it's glow in the dark, man. If any of you listening have that, bought it, if you don't have it now but you did have it, please let us know.
Please.
I want to Man, I would love to know who had that. It looks so cool.
I will buy it off somebody's back.
I was 9 years old, yeah. It's so cool. But that's just a little fun fact. So
that's amazing. He had some great shirts back then.
Yeah.
I did see the little – they showed a clip in the pre-match package before this of him defeating Jeff Jarrett to qualify. Yeah. And he had him up for the tombstone, and Jeff Jarrett's legs were, like, quivering up in the air. Yeah. I'd never seen anybody do that before. I thought it was a nice little touch.
It was.
And also in the pre-match package, I'd never heard this before in my life, but Todd Pettengill is narrating this video package, and he calls The Undertaker a nickname I never heard of before. He says,
568 pounds will square off against the man who walks with the angels, Mabel and The Undertaker in round one of the King of the Ring tournament.
I heard that too.
Laughed out loud and said, excuse me? What is that nickname? What does that mean? Why? Who told you to say that? What is that?
Yeah, was that Vince McMahon approved or not? Because that is that. I don't know if they ever use it again, but I'm interested to see if they do. So,
the man who walks with angels.
Isn't that the opposite of what he's supposed to be?
That's what I thought.
I noticed that too. I thought, again, I can't stand Todd Pettengill, and that just, yeah.
Where did that come from?
It's ridiculous. But yeah, I'm glad you noticed that too. So, anyway, let's get on with the match. Mabel comes out. It's got some good heat. He gives an interview in the rampway, though. They're big into doing that now.
I don't mind that. I think it's a nice different thing.
Yeah.
Interviews there or in the ring after the match, which is cool. And he's with Stephanie Wyand. I just wrote down our interviewers have come a long way since then.
Yeah, for sure.
She's no Renee Young.
No, not at all. But an Undertaker comes out. Obviously, Paul Bearer has no urn because it's dangling around Kama's neck.
Yep.
But again, Vincent Mann says,
he appears to be about 10 feet tall. It's almost as if he's not even walking. As if somehow he's floating to the ring.
Man, what are you talking about? So
I don't know.
He appears to be 10 feet tall, but
Vincent Mann is... go ahead.
No, go ahead, man.
I was going to say, Vincent Mann is joined by Doc Hendricks here on our commentary team. We always like to talk on the commentary teams here. Yeah. This is our first match that we're spending with Doc Hendricks. What'd you think of him, good old Michael PSAs?
I love Michael Hayes. I hate the name Doc Hendricks. I hate that he doesn't have – he has his ponytail cut off at this point, too?
I think so, yeah.
I think Vince McMahon cut his hair. I didn't like the Doc Hendricks character. I do love Michael Hayes. I love – the Freebirds. I love him now. I love watching him at the Hall of Fames in his stupid outfits. He's always got a fanny pack, and I loved him later on when the Hardys debut and stuff, seeing him with him. But yeah, as Doc Hendricks, I don't like that name. I don't like the character. But he was good on commentary though.
I thought he did a pretty good job. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. He's very just ridiculous and
yeah.
You know, I keep talking about as a kid because I go back to that, but. You know, back then, I didn't have any idea who Michael Hayes was. I was a WWF guy. I didn't know Freebirds. I didn't know Michael Hayes back then. So it's just crazy to me. And he wasn't that old here when he retired. It was like mid-30s, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just crazy now that I know the Freebirds and going back to that and what a dramatic shift it was for him to just become this corporate shill and become Doc Hendricks. Then it's crazy. But... yeah, I thought he had some good funny lines on commentary. Yeah. He actually had some good actual analysis, kayfabe-wise, of wrestling and psychology, and I might talk about those later on, but he did pretty good. He did pretty good.
Yeah, he does.
He says something here at the beginning.
Well, I know that Paul Bearer went back to the obituary blackboard to come up with his game plan tonight. The obituary blackboard.
They got these obvious plants in the and but not literal plants, but these creatures of the night. These guys that are dressed like I don't know, what would you call them? Black turtlenecks and kind of white face paint, ghoulish,
so, goth. Yeah, we have to talk about this.
Little girl sitting next to him with like her black shawl over her head. So, and these will pop up as we get into the next pay-per-view we're going to talk about. These will come up a lot more. We'll talk a lot more about them then. But this is, again, Undertaker's lost his urn. It's melted. It's around Kama's neck. So now, and we mentioned at the King Kong Bundy match that last episode that he's getting his power. They're trying to put over he's getting his power from the creatures of the night. So these are Undertaker's fans. But they got these jabronis planted in the audience. And they're there a lot. I was going through watching lots of Superstars and Monday Night Raws. And they're there every week, man.
It becomes this weird storyline. And I really want to ask Bruce Pritchard or somebody who's around them what the end game or the thought was here. Yeah, if you watched WWF in 1995, you remember they called them the Creatures of the Night. We said they were putting Creatures of the Night over at the last pay-per-view, trying to get that phrase over. There's these two goth-looking fans. I remember the rumor on the internet back in the early 2000s was, oh, that was Shane and Stephanie McMahon. But you go back and watch it, they don't look anything like those guys. But yeah, they always came out during the Undertaker's matches. Sometimes they would bring a black wreath down to intimidate the opponent, and it just never went anywhere. I think maybe Kama attacked them at one point. But
yeah, we'll get into that next pay-per-view. He becomes physical with them.
Yeah,
dumbest
no one comes thing. It doesn't get over at all. It's just these two goth fans that follow the Undertaker around is so. I don't know who came up with it or why they did it for so long. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. But as we talked about, talking Taker, it's building the mythology of him, I guess. It's changing from the urn to he's getting, maybe Vince is ready to get away from the urn because it's kind of hokey, I don't know, but they're moving to the new generation era, I don't know. But, it's building the mythology, whether it's a thumbs up or thumbs down, doesn't matter because it's going to keep going anyway. So,
yeah.
But it does kind of, it builds his mythology. He has some, followers, I guess you could say, so. It gives him that. I don't know. I'm trying to look at the silver lining.
Trying to look at the positive side.
Yeah.
Good for you.
But I agree with everything you said, though. So, but they start this match off face-to-face.
Face-to-face. Mabel shows no fear, man. He walks right up to Taker. I thought that was pretty cool.
So, as a big menacing heel, they're trying to get him over. That's good for him not to be scared, especially since he's going to win at the end of the night. Yeah. So.
And Taker's actually a couple inches bigger than Mabel. I thought that was interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which shows how big both those guys are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Mabel's a big dude. So.
568 pounds, they said.
And that's...
That's probably close.
Later on in his life, he's at 100 pounds of that, probably.
Yeah,
there's the typical Undertaker match at this point in his career. Left throat chops and kicks, and tries to close on the big guy. Can't really get him down. And he finally does, and immediately again goes for old school. Right?
He hits
first things he does.
And then there's just like a big botchamania collision. They run into each other. I don't know what happened there. This is a really sloppy match.
It is
coming from. Two non-wrestlers, I always like to qualify that. I who am I to critique it? But you just know it when you see it sometimes, and these guys are just... I don't think Mabel was the cleanest worker, at any point in his life, and they are just, just sloppy is the best way to put it. And you see that really, they have this collision, and then Taker does... He's done it a couple times, like this stunner on the outside of the ring, and then... He runs to go get Mabel and gets his foot caught up in between the ropes, just going to do something. I don't know what he was even trying to do, and he gets his foot stuck upside down on the ropes for like 2 minutes.
Yeah, and you can tell that wasn't planned
because
the way they were acting. But like even through these botched, botched belly to belly from Mabel, and then this, getting his foot caught up in the ropes. Undertaker doesn't ever break character, though.
I mentioned
that in earlier podcasts and earlier episodes because he still doesn't get, he doesn't go Shawn Michaels Vader, when Shawn Michaels misses and just stomps on Vader's face and says F you. But he doesn't do that to him here. He stays in character. He stays,
that's a great point.
Straight. And so, he turns the negative into a positive. He gets his foot caught in the rope. And he just tries to fight out of it like the Undertaker, the character would, So, kudos to him because he makes, he tries to find the silver lining in that situation, it seems, too. And, they just go with it. What are you going to do at that point? It's not part of the match.
It's
scary.
You can
tell it's not planned.
Because, you can see, he tries to get it out of there at one point, and he was real close to just snapping his ankle. You know, those ropes, when they get bent like that, are super, super tight.
They're cable.
The cables. And he easily could have snapped his ankle if they just tried to get it out of there the wrong way. They don't know what to do for a little while. Mo tries to provide a little distraction in there, and the referee finally just has to end up untying Undertaker. It's just, just a bad, ugly spot.
It was. And they come back in the ring, and this is when they redo the belly-to-belly spot. And it looks much better this time.
It does.
But then Abel does a camel clutch, and I just wrote, ouch, because he is wrenching it in, dude. But he's sitting on his back. 500 pounds on your back, worker, shoot, I don't care, man.
It doesn't feel good. No, it doesn't feel good.
He is pulling his chin, and I was like, I just wrote, ouch, because that hurts. And this is the part where the ECW fans start mouthing off to Mo.
Yeah.
You can't hear what they're saying, but I did
probably
know that.
Probably not good.
I want to know what you said. But then you got the rest in peace chants again. You don't have the urn out there for Paul Bearer to hold up. He starts the rest in peace chants, and that's getting over. You know,
it is.
We'll see it in the future matches, too.
Paul Bearer's getting excited.
He's a good cheerleader, man, out there. I love him. And then they're just on the outside for a little while, and Taker's selling quite a bit. He's given a lot to Mabel. I don't know if he was in on this Mabel push or not, if that was one of his boys and he cared about it, but I equate it to like the Brock Lesnar AJ Styles match. You could tell the Brock Lesnar that at we just had at Survivor Series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could tell Brock Lesnar cared because he gave a lot. He sold a lot for AJ Styles, and so same thing here. Undertaker's selling a lot. I don't know if you noticed that or not, but he really is.
And the story is that he doesn't have the urn anymore.
Yeah.
Kama has the urn, so the urn is what gives the Undertaker his power. He's still strong. He's still a very powerful wrestler, but he's more human now without the urn. The urn's what gives him the supernatural healing power, so he doesn't have that. So this is your chance to let somebody beat up on him and get one over on him, which is, I guess they timed that out and thought that up.
Yeah.
And it's at this point, I don't know if you heard this, Doc Hendricks on commentary, this match is starting to go kind of long here, and Doc, he raised the prospect of saying, well, if these guys don't make it, then we might have a Savio Vega roadie finals for the King of the Ring.
Yeah.
And you can kind of hear Vince just like throw up a little bit when he says that, like, well, let's hope that doesn't happen or something. Like that. It's like, oh my God.
Oh man. Please, I would turn off pay-per-view at that point. Yeah, no, that's true. I did hear you say that, but I do want to put over Mabel in a second. He does do a vertical suplex on Undertaker, and it was impressive looking.
Did
you see that spot? I thought it was pretty cool.
I said he did the suplex. I liked the pile driver that he did. He does a pile driver later on.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of stiff pile driver. I liked that.
It looked
pretty good. But generally, he really starts to slow down towards the end. He's kind of gasping for air a little bit.
Man.
Yeah.
He's a big dude, but he's not graceful. Like we talked about Yokozuna, that was the first time they fought Undertaker, that was a very graceful Yokozuna. He's very light on his feet,
but
big guy. Mabel is the opposite of that.
Not that.
Mabel's heavy on his feet.
But at one point, he does the suplex, body slam, and then he just kind of sits on him, just like gingerly.
Yeah.
He just sits down. Not a splash. He just sits down on him.
Yeah, it was weird. That pile driver was great. And then they do the double shoulder block spot, and they're both down. And Taker does a stinger splash. And we'll notice that. He starts doing that more. And that is... Anybody knows me, I love Sting. I really wish Sting and Taker got to fight or got to wrestle, but I love the Stinger Splash. I mean, that's one of my favorite moves.
Seeing
a big guy like that do it is awesome.
I didn't remember that being one of his moves, so I got excited when he did that.
Yeah, I was marking out like a 10-year-old again, man, because that's Sting's my boy. I love Sting. So seeing Undertaker do that was great. You know, and he doesn't, even though he's a face here, I remember mentioning this in one of our first podcasts, once he turned face, he still intimidates the official. You know, he gets in his face when he tries to pull him off or choke and stuff. So, again, it's cool to see that continuity there. Even though he's a baby face, he's still not, he's not kissing babies. And he is doing public service announcements for drinking and driving. But he's not afraid to get in the referee's face, in the zebra's face. So, we got to wrap this match up here.
Mabel, the Taker gets Irish whipped into the referee. The referee goes down. The Taker hits... It's a pretty decent choke slam. Mabel got up off his feet a little bit, and then Undertaker ends up taking out Mo, Mabel's tag team partner, and that's when the finish comes, is Kama coming in to interfere and hits a kick. It's like a kind of like a punt kick almost.
Yeah.
Sort of like Randy Orton's old thing. and Mabel hits a big old leg drop, kind of similar to Yokozuna's giant leg drop, and gets what I would say is maybe the biggest win over The Undertaker in his 5 years so far in the company. Obviously, Hulk Hogan beat him. He lost to Yokozuna, which is a big main eventer. I mean, this is the biggest probably upset over The Undertaker that we've seen so far.
I'd say this is only his third loss that we've reviewed, right? I mean, he lost to Hulk Hogan, but he got rolled up there. I mean, it wasn't really like a, you know, definitive win.
Not counting Survivor Series matches.
Yeah, yeah. Hulk Hogan, the heel, face, rolls him up and gets a cheap win.
Yeah.
Yeah, Yokozuna takes 10 guys to stuff him into a casket, and he's gone for 8 months. But yeah, here it's just like, I mean, Kama kicks him in the back, and then he gets leg dropped, and then Mo wakes up the referee, and he bends him. And the crowd comes alive, booing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they drown the place in boos, man.
Taker gets right up and goes after Kama right after that, too.
This is when, you know, the kicking out at 3.1 is okay. Because he wasn't like he'd been beaten, you know, like King Kong Bundy kicked out and walked away like a baby. But here, you know, he gets up and goes right after Kama, and Kama slaps him, I believe, and he starts stalking Kama all the way to the back. And I love that he doesn't run. You know, he's like a horror movie villain. You know, he just like Michael Myers or something. He just stalks him, you know. But he's selling that he's beat up, you know. He didn't have the urn and everything still. But yeah, he just kind of stalks Kama back to the back. And Mabel is going to meet Savio Vega or the roadie, which winds up being Savio Vega. And yeah. Wow, man. Like, in Philadelphia, you're going to do this, Matt. This pay-per-view, it's just, man, weird.
And, you know, I tried to think about it as – being younger, it always confused me. I tried to think about it, and I guess that I kind of get it. You know, Diesel is the champion. Diesel, 7-foot-tall, babyface, which is weird. Because as a babyface champion, you want the good guy to be the underdog. So if you've got a big guy as your champion, though, you need some really big heels for them to be the underdog. And there's not that many guys in the WWF. There's just not that many guys that can be that are big guys in general. He's gone through Sid a little bit. Yokozuna just can't go anymore, really, at this point. He's in this tournament, but it's just not – just a shell of himself already at this point. So who's left around? Well, let's go with Mabel. Let's strap him up and see if we can make him the big guy to take on Diesel. Let's build him up. I think, in hindsight, I think it could have been interesting if they would have gone maybe with Kama instead. Try to put him in that main event slot. Like, he could go a little bit more. He's not huge like Mabel, but I think he could have stood his own against Diesel, and he never really got that major push. So, like, going against The Undertaker was the biggest thing that he did as Kama. So, I don't know. What do you think?
I thought the same thing. I was like, man, why did they not just have Kama beat Shawn Michaels, give him some huge heel heat, and let him take this place? I thought the exact same thing, man. That's funny. But yeah, it would have been, you know, again, hindsight's 2020, but I thought it would have been a better story, and it would have built into the Undertaker story that he has going on with Kama too, you know? But that story's going to continue regardless of if we want it to or not, Undertaker and Kama. So, but yeah, Mabel's a King of the Ring winner. He definitely didn't have the career that other King of the Rings had at this point, or future ones will, but I'd say it's just a notch below Billy Gunn.
Probably so. Probably the worst King of the Ring winner of all time. You know, it's funny. I feel like if this pay-per-view happened today, he definitely would have won the world title at some point. You know, it was a different time back then. But nowadays, you know, if Jinder Mahal can win it, it's surprising that Mabel didn't win it back then. But
Great Khali is a former world champion, so Mabel definitely would have been.
Yeah.
Well, when he was in WWE's version of ECW, he was competing for the world championship.
That's right.
Too, wasn't he?
So, that's right.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Yeah, we'll get to Undertaker trying to get revenge against Kama at SummerSlam 95 on our next episode.
This match is almost 11 minutes, by the way. It's 10 minutes and 44 seconds. It is about probably 5 minutes too long, honestly.
Easily. Yeah.
Just because of the clientele in it.
And this was a short pay-per-view. You know, it was, I think it was only 2.5 hours on the network. And one of the matches was like from the pre-show. Like, they showed the pre-show match.
Video. Yeah.
So either they cut some stuff out, or this was a super short pay-per-view.
I don't know. So,
speaking of, real quick, before we get into their plugs, I watched for a few minutes after the match, and they show scenes from the Hall of Fame induction the night before. They show just some highlights of it. And real quick, there's a glimpse of The Undertaker hanging out at the Hall of Fame induction on there, kind of out of character. He's got the hat and he's got the trench coat on, but he doesn't have all the makeup on. And he's just like shaking hands and talking to some fans. So just real surprising that they even put that clip on there, because they really didn't break kayfabe back then in 1995. And they didn't, it's not a total break of it, but just a real interesting glimpse on there. And it's also the only time you'll ever see Bill Murray cutting a promo on a WWF show, because he sends in a video package for George the Animal Steele's Hall of Fame induction, riding on an elephant from the set of Larger Than Life, and he's like quoting George the Animal Steele, and it's not the actual video. It's a camera shooting the video on a screen projected on the wall, so it's really dark, but you can see Bill Murray and you hear him cutting a promo on a WWF show. So go check that out on the WWE Network if you've never seen that before.
That's fantastic. I want more Bill Murray. I would like him to replace any of the commentaries on Raw or SmackDown.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. That'd be awesome. Yeah.
Oh, man. Great. That's fantastic.
Yeah, just a little interesting fact. And if you got any interesting facts, anything you remember about this match or this era, anything that we missed out, if you were there at King of the Ring 1995, please tell us about how horrendous it was and what you heard those ECW fans yelling at Mo. Please let us know about it. Let us know on Twitter at Talking Taker, Facebook Talking Taker, on iTunes, Podomatic, Google Play, Stitcher, all those places. You can leave us comments, you can give us a rating, you can follow us, retweet us, let us know. Let us know what you thought about the match. Watch it along with us. Watch SummerSlam 95 to prepare for the next episode and give us your thoughts on that. And
we're back in Pennsylvania in SummerSlam.
Oh, is it? Oh, weird. That's weird. Yeah. Yeah, just a couple months later.
Anyway, we'll talk about that next time.
Sure. Anything else? Did we miss anything?
I don't think so, man. I mean, yeah, again, if you were there, we want to see a picture. We want to know if you were there at SummerSlam 1995. So,
tell us all about it.
Oh, no, not SummerSlam. Excuse me, King of the Ring 1995.
Either
you were there. So, or, whatever, we don't mind. Yeah, ECW fans, thanks for making this show bearable. So, y'all were entertaining. So, other than that, ladies and gentlemen, take her easy.
If you drink and drive, sooner or later, you're going to meet The Undertaker.